In Saita,
yeah,
and the next piece. So again, we'll do the pieces like they are in the in Yaakov, and then do the morale or whatever might be appropriate. Amar of Chista, we're holding Amar of Chista Daf Gimel Amid Beis. It's the piece number. It's Gimel in Yaakov. Snusa bebeisa kikayu l'shum shemi. Znus in a house is like a worm in sesame seeds. The sesame seed worms, I guess, are tiny. I mean, I assume that sesame seeds aren't too big, so that the bugs are really, really tiny. Vamrav chista, tukfa bebeisa, anger in the house, kas, kikaryo lishum shami. It's also like a worm. Then the Gemara adds idividib itzitsa of the gavra lesnamba. Both of these are nagia the woman, not nagia the man. So we have two or three nekudas here that are nagia. First of all, the mashal of a karya kishum shmi, that these two things are obviously bad things, obviously not good things, but these two things are something that are nogea to they're nogea to the bias like karya kishum shmi. Two, the specific element of these two inyanim, znus and kas. And finally, the last nekuda, the difference in itzitsa and gavra. Rashi says over here that itzitsa is because she's at home and she doesn't take care of the house, and that's why that's what it is. That's Rashi learns pashit why it is that it's the woman. As in other words, it's not that it's better or worse if a woman does it or a man does it, as much as how much does it affect the bias and so on. So let's first see the maral, because he touches on one of the three nekudis, on the tziruf of znus and kas. Znusa, pirush, ki aznus goyrim she'ein brocha b'bayis klal. The znus is goyrim that there's no brocha in the bayis. Bezer, ki chol znus hi asara unetia min aderech. Ki zeh loshon soite shu sote min aderech, So because it's something that's diverging from the derech, it doesn't get bracha. So morale gives us a certain nekuda about what the tziruf of these two inyanim is. And more than just the fact kas and taiva and znus, but also something about it being bedafka shayach to the lack of bracha and the bias bedafka. That's basically the points that he makes. A bit unclear. Let's try to clarify a bit and try to understand it a little bit. Let's start with a point that is less madgish. The musig of bracha in the bias. The bias is an inclusive element. When we speak about a bias, we speak about something which integrates different elements. On the most physical level, you speak of a house, so you speak about a place that has the bedroom and the living room and the kitchen and so on and so forth. It sort of brings together different elements. When you talk about a bias in a little bit more of a conceptual way, you're talking about a man and a wife who are two very, very distinct different elements. and coming together, the bias brings them together, and brings them together in a way that integrates them. Now, the klal is that bracha in the bria is done through a merger of two different inyanim, the reproduction of people, even in plant life, you by and large have, in anything that's more complex plant life, you have zach and akeva, and the tsura of bracha in this world is by a mizug of different kohos. In Kabbalah, when we talk about new hashpos that come on special days like Shabbos and Yom Tov, this part of Shabbos, that part, the Musaf and Mincha, there's always a sort of introduction about which midas are being mizdavik and how it, and therefore what hashpah comes. You always have the concept of being, of any new hashpah coming, comes through a zivug of different midas. Now, the reason why the Maral here is giving us a little bit of a hint, a little bit of an oimek into why it is that bracha and continuity and bli gvul is specifically done through mahalach of zivuk. Let's go back to what the Rambam says, and the Maral says this in his language. It's very, very similar, just the different, a little bit of a different language. There is a mahalach in the Bria that's called Derech Hashem, and that mahalach goes indefinitely, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bli Soif, and the Derech, the road that he has put into the Bria that goes in that direction, is Bli Gvul. So we have a concept of Bli Gvul that goes without, forever. It's specifically because it's aligned with Derech Hashem. It specifically falls under the general category of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which means existence, continued existence, Hemshech, and Mitzius, and that is that Kav in the Bria. Anytime you veer from it, in whatever direction, it will sputter out. Let's give a mushel in something physical. You have many systems that what keeps it going is equilibrium. So let's take an economic model. You'll have, when the production of goods is equal to the consumption or the potential consumption of goods, you have a very, very you have a well balanced, you have an equilibrium of the economic sphere, and basically this will go on forever. The farmers will make bread, the cobblers will make shoes, the cab drivers will drive people, and everybody is getting, the amount of bread produced is what's needed to feed everybody, the amount of shoes needed to shod everybody, and so on. So you have a very, very balanced economy that keeps moving along and will keep going. On the other hand, if let's say people become very consumptive, heavy advertising, and you have to buy this and that and the other things, and then people start gobbling up goods, all of a sudden prices go up, some people can't afford it, and you start getting imbalances, or vice versa. If there's a shortage of something, prices go up, and so on. That tends to fall apart. It's a bubble that bursts. It's like any business bubble, where something went out of whack. If the demand for mortgages exceeded the ability to pay for mortgages, you end up with a mess. So you always have equilibrium for the systems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made go on forever. Ecological systems, when you have an island that has the right amount of bats and moths and sand and sea and whatever it is, the island just keeps staying forever it is. You bring in people and they destroy the rats because they like the rats. All of a sudden, the birds don't have what to eat, and everything begins to spin out of control, and you end up with a big mess. So you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mida in the bria of hemshechius, of kiyum, is equivalent to a mizug of midos. It's not one particular mida, but it's the right balance of all the midas. And this is what the Rambam's core of Hilchos Deos is. This is what the Kuzari makes the case when the Melech Kuzari asks him, if you guys are so spiritual and wonderful, why don't you just lock yourself up in a monastery and sort of just be spiritual? And he said, you've gotten it wrong. The Torah gives each koach what is necessary for it. That is what the Torah does. The Torah creates an appropriate balance. This is a time for chesed. This is a time for din. This is a time to be harsh. This is a time to be giving and extending. This is a time to think. This is a time to do, and so on and so forth. So the Derech Hashem, which we would call the Derech HaMemutza, and that's the Derech that allows for continuity in anything in the world, going from something as physical as an ecological system between the seagulls and the fish and the plants and so on, to something like an economy of a society, which is more complex and more human, to even drachim in avodas Hashem. There have been drachim in avodas Hashem that were extraordinarily extreme, and they may have made a point at some point, but they fell off the face of the earth because they couldn't continue. There was no hemshechius to it because it goes to a katzeh. So maybe there was a need to focus on A or B or C at some point, but when the focus is out of whack, it can't continue forever like that. And that's what Rambam says. There are times in life, maybe a person, let's say, is very nechshon taiva, so he has to go the other direction. So he has to pull back a lot. But pulling back a lot is not an end game. That's not a way, it can't succeed that way. It helps you rebalance and realign and get back to balance. Those two kochos are, when they integrate in a bias integrates the kochos of zachar and akeva, and that's why a bias can perpetuate itself. You have different kochos that, when they're balanced properly, that allows for a new door and another door and so on and so forth. So the metzias of a bias that includes in itself a the kochos of ava and the kochos of yira, which are primary kochos, and the father, like Rashi says, the father's kind of puts down some of the discipline, and he's more the Yira figure. And the truth is, it's not just the discipline. It's just the figure of, this is right, this is what we have to do, and so on and so forth. And the mother who projects it through Ava and kindness and warmth and all that chelik, that balance is a bias and allows for a production, reproduction, and continuity. If one of those two kohos is out of whack, which means there's either kpeda going on, or there is arayas. Arayas is no boundary for your desires. Kpeda is no quarter given for anybody. Yes, you love the person, but it has to be exactly this way. If it's not this way, a makpid, that either one or the other destroys the house. And it destroys it from the inside. And that's the mashal of like a little worm inside the seed. You don't even notice it, but it poisons the atmosphere. And if the woman's heart is someplace else, or if she is very rigid, in either case of it, it destroys the house. Now, the reason why there's a focus, the pashtus is, the reason why they focus on the woman more than the man is because the woman is that keres bias. I saw one of these signs in somebody's house. If mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy in the house. And it has a lot to say about the woman's input to the house. Because a woman is the one who creates the atmosphere by and large, and she's the one who's invested in the house, issues within her that tilt one way or another way will be a lot more destructive. Obviously, if a husband is either running around with women or is matal ema, it also it shakes the house. It's not freeing him, but Chazal is speaking about something that destroyed from the inside. In other words, you don't even know, when a father comes home and he gets angry, and he, you know, blows a gasket and he yells and screams, that's an outside attack. Everybody felt good in the house, then the father walks in and boom, boom, boom. Or the father's busy doing X, Y, and Z. Those are outside things that just sort of destroy a house on the outside. But when a woman is not as warm as she should be, because her heart is someplace else, she's, you know, I know a family where, unfortunately, it's an issue that's been, I think, the second generation. In many ways, an extremely wonderfully, in other words, accomplished as much as a family that has many, many milas. In other words, very gifted people, highly gifted people. But the mother, unfortunately, grew up in a not healthy home. And the way she deals with, in the way she gets angry, she could not speak for weeks to the kids and to the husband. It creates an incredibly, it's very different when a man comes in and throws something. It's an outside attack, also very unhealthy. But the withholding any type of human contact and warmth and motherliness is eats up something from the inside. And normally on the outside everything looks okay. You don't hear screaming, you don't hear that. But it's something that's really eaten it up from the outside, from the inside. So you have so that is the pshat where Maharal presents it, as those two things are things that are destructive. They destroy the bias, like we said, because there's a certain equilibrium, and you need the two kochos and two middos, and when it's not memuzug, it's not balanced properly. It becomes destructive in a bias especially. That's one. Yes. Yes. Do you wish to argue, Peter?
No.
Yes.
I need to be. What does it mean that, when it's anger or Zeus, whatever it is, what does it do to the bias? What does it do to the children in particular? Yeah, and it's very, very speaking in a very general sense. Can you get more particular, or each one Luffy is made as it affects him in a different way?
It's he grows up missing something. If a person doesn't have warmth, kindness, goodness built into him, there's a certain hollowness. We're very scared of a person who doesn't seem to have any emotions. Even if the person seems to be very good, there was somebody many years ago, Meir Yeshiva. He was like biggest masmid. We'd be learning all night, it's like somebody told me, who himself is a big master, like walked in 3 a.m. and saw this person learning there on a Ben Azmanim. And this person, who himself is a very big master, but he's astute, many years ago, you know, when the guy was a Bachi, maybe just got engaged or before, told me he worries me tremendously because there's something cold. It's like a machine. There's something lacking there. I don't know what it is, but he scares me. I mean, the person was extraordinary, able and gentle, and hardly spoke above a whisper, and sat and learned really besides. This person got married, and I mean, they're quite poor. I don't know the story. He's married a chashva woman. At some point later, he just left with his oldest child, became totally fry. I mean, this is talking about 15 years or something into the marriage. We're talking about not a day after. And there was something to this person where there was a lack of feeling, emotion, warmth. Those are very basics, and you get it because your mother projected it to you. It's like, God forbid, children grow up in an orphanage. A lot of it is there's a lack of warmth. There's a lack of care, and that's frightening. It becomes people run from a home like that. It's something that's they don't know what it is, but they just don't feel, and that's what a home is. there's a poem by Robert Frost. I don't know for those of you who know American. I think it's called something about the workmen come home, the handyman come home. I don't remember it is. It's a long. I don't want to be. It's somebody who worked for them. Like he was a living working person, but anytime he had a better offer, he would run off and work at the job there, and they were upset with him. At some point, he dropped back in, and the man at the house is extremely angry that, you know, he uses us when he needs us, and, you know, when he has a job, he doesn't come, and when it's off season, he comes to us, whatever it is. And the wife says, a home is a place. The husband says, like, a home is a place where you don't have to earn your keep. And the wife says something along the lines of, a home is a place where you belong no matter what. And that's a sense of, that's a very basic sense of humanity. That you don't only exist because you've earned your existence, you exist because you exist. You have a right to exist because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a right. And we start with Midas HaChesed. And yes, and we impose things to help you grow, develop, be productive, you know, become self-sufficient, but we don't start with the premise that you're not going to live unless you deserve to live. That's a very basic thing, and you see it. It's when there's a lack of warmth in mother, there's something about the children that's hollow. They're defeated, they're depressed, they're hollow, or they have no compassion. It's frightening. You want to take, you know, there's a book, a Frum book, you know, a Frum person wrote a book, I forgot what it's called, it was published by Gabby Feldheim, that type of thing, I think it might have been in Hebrew a few years ago, a Russian Baal Tshuva, he was a doctor, he was a surgeon, and he came to Israel, a long story, but he was in an orphanage in Russia, grew up, and he describes the cruelty of the kids to each other, and it's incredible, the lack of soul. That's the best, I guess that's the only way to describe it. No soul. The Al-Kapanim, so that's how he explains that. I want to bring in one or two other points. Yes. Yes. By the way, we have, I see here another guest, Yisrael Badian.
Yeah, it's me, David Rothenberg.
Okay, I thought that was what do you call it? A nom de plume. Okay, yes. A nom de internet. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, who's Nitzan? Uh-huh. What did you want to?
So, women are often described as the way we're describing it now, as, you know, the Akeres of bias and the warmth and etc.
Yes.
We often find, though, that she's made us a din. The female element is the Midas Adin.
Yes.
Who are they?
Okay. So let's depending on the Nekuda, Lamashal, the woman's attitude towards the house is to draw a circle and build a cocoon and contain everything. Ambition to go forward. To grow something, that's much more a man's tchuna. So the woman, it's like nakva lischarcha. The word nekeva, nakva means limit. A man's zera contains hundreds of millions of sperm. A woman limits it to one. In the sense of, it's another dimension of it. But in the man, that's why a man can take many women halachically and physically and emotionally. A man is, you know, I mean, don't try, but he a woman has one focus, and that's why for woman's nus is so much more chamor. It's something is a split personality there, because a woman loyalty and wanting to have a bias, the bias encloses some things. A woman is extremely protective from outside elements. She closes around what's there. So in that sense, the woman represents din in that way. But when you're talking about the emotions, they're very, very different. There's another Nekuda. There's a sefer called Ein El Yohu on Agadas Rebbe Eliyahu Shick. It's quite a famous sefer. And he makes another very interesting point about why the woman dafka rather than the man. the teva of a man at his worst is noach lichos, noach lirtzos. Men become easily upset and they can get past something. A woman, again, if you're describing in a very, very vague klal, it's kosher lichos, kosher lirtzos, lirtzos. A woman tends to be easily forgiving, but she's wounded by something. A man gets a blows up, and then it doesn't leave as a deep emotional wound, and therefore is he get over upset? You know, so okay. So yesterday he said something nasty about me. That's fine. Tomorrow, I couldn't care less. A woman is not like that, and that's why. Whenever the man does something wrong, so let's take an example. The man strayed, the man was mezana. It's an avera, it's a terrible avera. If it keeps going, it certainly is destructive. But it's possible for him to get a big shock, back off, and get past it, and become a good person. He can get angry, he can get past it, and it's easier. Things don't imprint themselves on his emotions. So it doesn't have that destructiveness that a worm has, you know, once a worm settles in, the worm doesn't leave. A woman, you know, she's a lot more forgiving, but, you know, once it blows, she can't get past it, nowhere near as good as a man, and it stays there. It's true science nus. A man can take it lightly, in the sense that he can just forget about an affair that he had, and it was a taiva, and it's not machmas his maila that he's such a tzaddik. It doesn't mean much to him. I mean, being mezane is a one night affair, and doing tshuva is a one night affair. I mean, it's nothing. You know, there wasn't a deep emotional thing. A woman, she connects because she's deeply unhappy with something, and she's deeply wants somebody to care for her, and she forms an emotional bond. And even if she's forced apart, it left its mark in the person. Same thing with anger. A man's emotions are less vulnerable, so he gets angry, he blows up. It's sort of a more of an aggressiveness, and therefore he blows up. And then, you know, next day he's moves on, and that's how he works. A woman is wounded, and she doesn't get over wounds very easily. And that's why it having a woman emotionally really, really in a bad state is something. It's a worm that eats up at the house. I thought it's a very, very good pshat. He speaks a little bit differently. He speaks about the avera shaboy. I mean, his point is an avera that's ongoing and constant is worse than an avera that is one time, and therefore man is mezana, but he doesn't become osik to his wife. A woman is not. It's same thing with kas. If she doesn't get over her kas, brings a Gemara, so b'meil it's an ongoing avera. I think more from a psychological point of view, I'd like to try to understand it. Going back to something else also before that, we said, I guess, about bias, I just want to bring something else in. You know, the concept that bays stands for two means that a bias automatically stands for two elements, minimal. In other words, when I talk about an enclosure, I'm talking about enclosing things in it. I'm not talking about a body armor. I'm talking about an enclosure. So by definition, the minimum to enclose is two items, or else it's the same item. The forming something that brings together So the base, you know, meaning two, and the bias, meaning a house, it's the same. It comes, it echoes from the same place. There's one more address, so to speak, is the the Goyen speaks, he mentioned this Chazal over here, and the Goyen speaks initially a lot about, the Goyen speaks a lot about the two major shrushim of Yetzirah being Kas and Taiva and so on. One is the Zohar, one's the Keva, he speaks about that. I want to touch one more point on, in the Maral over here. The Maral says that Znush Reita HaGuf V'Kas U'Pol HaNefesh. So let's talk a little bit about this also. The Maral always speaks about three parts of a person: the Guf, the Nefesh, the Seichel. The Guf is the physical Guf that we talk about, not only the static body, but the kochos of Guf: eating, drinking, women, etc. It was the physical drives of the Guf. The Nefesh is something that is the emotional drives of a person: ambition, greed, jealousy, anger, etc. And Seichel is what we would call the neshama, the higher senses of a person, and so on. That's Maral's Chalukah. He speaks about Kas and Taiva in those Lashon Shainis as follows. The Chalukah of Seichel, we never are able to speak of deviances in that Chalukah. I mean, what we call Seichel, like Deus Kozvos and stuff like that, it is possible. But he's talking about the Koach to see things the way they are through the Neshama. Neshama is always Tor, Neshama is not to be Toiri. There is not going to be a deviation between in that realm. That realm is no shas to deviation, by almost by definition. When we talk about the Guf and the Nefesh, you can have deviations. But let's go to the core of the deviations between the two. Guf is physical, and the nature of the physical is that it desires to stay in one place. It doesn't want to exert. Inertia is what describes something physical. For something to exist, the core definition of what mass is inertia. What is its mass? The level of inertia it has. So in a ruchnistic way, Taiva wants everything delivered to it. I want to lay in bed and have the potato chips and the drinks and the movie and the TV served to me. Guf, if we're to sum up its entirety of Guf, what is a core problem of Guf? It's the mida of stagnating, staying in one place, you know, and kind of not going anywhere, receiving hanos, not controlling itself, not training in itself, just being constantly, being wined and dined, so to speak. The drive of the nefesh, what he calls nefesh, is the motion. It's always to do more. Ambition, greed, jealousy, anger. Those are all types of activities that tend to, the nature is conquering. It's always pushing, growing, and so on and so forth. So in a certain sense, these are the two. Taiva always wants to lay back and be nishane. Yes, we will pursue the taivas, but taiva in itself is a receiving type of thing. I want to receive hanos. The chemda, or the what he calls the nefesh, is always driving to realize myself, accomplish myself, make myself bigger, and so on. both of these kochos are very basic, and a person needs to balance them, because each one without the other one is destructive totally. So if you have a guf without a nefesh, it stays in one place forever, and that's called dead in another language, and the hallmark of something dead is that it sits in one place. And a nefesh without any type of menucha to it is destructive. It keeps expanding till it bursts. It keeps pushing till it bursts. So in a core way, those are two ktsavos of. Rav Moshe Shapiro once defined the difference between gaiva and kavod. He said, today we don't know what gaiva is, and everybody's just kind of looking at him. He said, we know what kavod is. Kavod is a nekevedika yetzahara. I want to lay back, sit at a dinner, and hear the wonderful things people say about me. That's a pchinas nekeva. Gaiva means where I'm aggressive, I'm right, and I want people to think like me, and I want people to understand like me, and to do as I say. Gaiva is in a very, very aggressive midah. Kavod is a very passive midah. I just want other people to stand up, sit down. But Gaiva doesn't care for kavod, he cares to push his agenda. Okay, any questions? I have a few minutes.
Alexander, that's a nefesh, right?
What?
Alexander the Great, that's just a nefesh, unbridled nefesh.
Correct, and that's why the women were the ones that, when he came over to Har HaChoshech, the women's are the ones who taught him his lesson. And it says that he came and they sat down and they served him golden loaves. And he said, how do you expect me to eat it? So they said, well, we figured you have enough bread to eat in Greece, so you must be looking for golden bread. In other words, what drove you to the ends of the world to conquer it? I mean, why don't you just enjoy what you have? You have more than you could possibly enjoy in Athens. So what drove you to come here? Gold. So eat the gold. Let's see if gold can be anything more than just a drive to conquer. So yes, Alexander is that type of it, and the women taught him the lesson exactly that. Okay, and yes, okay. Good.
Thanks,
take care, bye.